It's our first time playing in Carbondale.
Is it?
Yeah.
Have you gotten up into the mountains and performed up there in other places?
Yeah, we've played Aspen, Vail, Glenwood Springs. We've played, you know, few places up there, just not Carbondale.
Okay. I don't know if you've done any virtual shows since the pandemic, and this is a virtual show. I just wonder what that's
right.
going to be like for you, not having an audience. Is that going to change the way you do it?
Well, actually, we've done a few virtual concerts from the house, from the comfort of our home, which I'll tell you, it feels more like recording our rehearsal, you know, because it's us at home in the basement with a camera. So it feels like we're just rehearsing and people get to see it from their home, you know. You definitely don't feel the energy. But what's going to happen in Carbondale, from my understanding, is we're going to be live streaming from a venue.
Yes.
So that in itself already takes us out of our element of being at home, being in the comfort of our own home. So it feels different already. We have a little more space. We don't have to look around, you know, and see the things we have to clean up or anything like that.
Right. Right. But so I guess you, instead of playing to an audience, you're playing to the camera a little
bit. That's it. That's how things got to be now. Further notice.
That's sort of the way it is these days. Has the pandemic upended a lot of how you do things?
Absolutely, yeah. Everything shifted, you know. And we actually took a while to adapt to the virtual concerts. A lot of people went right into it, you know, since March or since April. It took us a while. We just decided to step away from it for a while. And because we've been working really hard for a couple years, we've been touring pretty hard, so it felt good to get a break and not have to perform for a while. But now, you know, we learned how to actually do a proper live stream where the sound is actually good and you don't have to worry about Wi-Fi issues.
Oh, cool.
And so we got a hang of it.
Did you do that yourself, or did you have some people helping you?
Well, our DJ / producer and engineer, Carl Carell, he's coming with us to Carbondale. He got us all set up with the proper equipment.
Oh, okay. So it's always good learning new skills, huh, I guess?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned you're bringing a DJ with you. Tell us about what people will see when they tune in to Steve's Guitars live stream.
Okay, so they're going to see myself, Big Samir, Asia Black, and Carl Carell on the stage, two vocalists and one multi-instrumentalist / producer. And we're just going to give you guys 100% energy as if we were all in the same place.
So are the two of you, you and your wife, are you playing instruments too, or are you just vocalizing?
Generally we do. Asia plays the guitar and sings and raps, and I play the cajon, which is a box drum from Peru. And so it really depends on the energy of the show, if we're going to do songs that call for that, or, you know, if we just go... we're all instrumental.
Okay. Well, I watched one video. Let's see, which one was it? It was the one at Colorado Public Radio, the open air.
The open air
thing. And I saw you playing the cajon on that one. But that one was a really stunning and beautiful album. It wasn't exactly hip-hop. Your wife, Asia,
right.
she was singing, and she was singing very well.
Yeah. And so that's the thing is, you know, our music is a fusion. It is a fusion of soul music, reggae, and a little bit of hip-hop. We started out as just hip-hop artists, and then we grew into actual musicians who play multiple instruments and who produce our own music, and we're well-traveled. And so we know so much about music, and we try to incorporate a little bit of all of our travels into the music. So now it's definitely grown into something bigger than just hip-hop. And on this most recent project we have, Asia decided not to just sing a hook or two, but to actually sing full songs. You know, we challenge ourselves and push ourselves to try new things all the time. And so, so she made a conscious decision to start singing a lot more. And Coming Home was one of those songs, and you can feel the impact it has.
Oh, yeah. She made me cry. She made me cry, man.
It's a very emotional song.
Yes, it is. Yeah, where did that song come from? Did the two of you write that together?
Yeah, no, she actually wrote it first. She wrote the first couple verses. And then just from our travels, and I think she actually wrote it from an exercise. You know, sometimes we challenge ourselves and take a couple words and then take 15 minutes to just write a song and two words and an emotion. And then, you know, that's where it landed. And then she said, well, I would like for you to sing the hook with me and then also add a short verse towards the end. And being married and living together and touring together, sharing the same experiences, you know, we were both there and experiencing these things when you're on the road and you miss your family and you know, you create homes in different people and different family members, and that's where you want to be when you're out and missing everyone. So it was a pretty simple song to write for us.
Well, natural. I read somewhere, though, that you often take your kids with you when you're touring and playing.
Yeah, we do. It was a lot easier when they were way younger. You know, they're big kids now. We have 14, 12, and 9.
Okay.
So we have, you know, three big kids. And so this year is a little more challenging because it's hard to catch up on work and keep up with work when you're out on the road. So, you know, the plan was to bring them back to homeschool next year so they can just travel with us because they learn so much being on the road.
Yeah, I'll bet. And what a wonderful life, I would think, especially if you have a really tight family bond.
For sure. And we just took, about a month ago, we took a trip to visit some family, and we went to the sand dunes. We've just been trying to experience the outdoors since we've been in the house for about 3 months.
Yeah.
So we've just been going to a lot of different national parks and sand dunes and, you know, little creeks and rivers and hiking and just enjoying the great outdoors.
Is that your plan for this trip to Carbondale? Are you bringing the kids, and are you going to get to take a hike or go sit in a hot spring or something?
We're definitely bringing the kids, and we're probably going to come early and, spend a little time around there. As a matter of fact, I was going to ask you, are the hot springs open?
The hot springs in Glenwood Springs are open. The hot springs, the natural hot springs on the Crystal River called Penny Hot Springs up from Carbondale are also open, although you might want to stay away from there just because they're jammed.
Yeah.
A lot of people are going there.
Oh, wow.
There.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that, you know, we're still trying to avoid places that have a lot of people and all that. You know, on this last trip we took, we all got tested for coronavirus and they all came back negative, which is a great feeling to actually know that, you know, we're negative. So we still, you know, we're taking the right steps in not just being out there recklessly, you know what I mean?
Now, you said that you sort of took some time off because of the quarantine and everything. Did you use that time for artistic purposes, or did you just let all of that go and just breathe and cook and love your kids?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The first 3 weeks, to tell you the truth, we did not do any music at all. Everyone was calling us like, oh, we want to see you guys live. Are you going to do virtual concerts? And we just did not write any music, did not perform, did not. We barely even went online. We just enjoyed the time with the family. We enjoyed time catching up on movies and reading books. And we took online classes. And it was just, you know, it was the first time being home that long for us. So we just really enjoyed that time and got reacquainted with ourselves. You know, we cleaned the house and painted the chairs, you know, did a lot of activities at home. And just recently, this past month, we've been writing new music, and it feels great. It's some of the best music we've ever written. So.
Oh, that's exciting. Now, how does the writing process work for you? Do you come up with some rhymes, and then how does it work?
It depends. I mean, I can tell you what we did yesterday, which is, since it's the most recent one. Carl Carell, our producer, has been staying with us. You know, he's quarantined with us. He can't escape. So what he's been doing is he's been producing beats every day and from scratch. Either he'll play a riff on a guitar, and then I'll get on the cajon and start creating a pattern. Asia will come in maybe with a bass line. And just creating everything from scratch, so the music sounds really authentic. You know, it sounds like us and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And so yesterday, what he did is he came up, he produced a whole beat, and then we went downstairs into the basement. Asia got in front of the microphone and just came up with a hook, and I came up with 8 measures and just sang them into the microphone, and then we came up with a bridge. And before you know it, the song was done in 30 minutes.
How about that? Huh.
Yeah, it's really, it's magical. It's, I think we're in a place now where we're not overthinking what we're doing. You know, we're familiar with the process. It's second nature. So we're just letting it happen. We're just letting the music flow out.
How did you get to that place? That must have taken some doing.
It definitely has. I think it's years of writing and recording, years of performing and touring. You know, I think when you have the 10,000 hours in, you know, you get to a point where it's a part of who you are.
So you've learned to get out of your own way.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know, we've seen what that does. You know, and it's not healthy, and it doesn't get anywhere. You know, we've had songs that we really put in a lot of time and effort into, and then it did not turn out the way we wanted it to. So now it's like, okay, I have a thought. Let me just express it and let it be. A lot of times, even if you read a lot of these autobiographies from some of your favorite artists, they'll tell you some of their biggest hits were songs that just came to them, you know, some songs that they did not overthink.
Yeah, yeah, they were like a channel.
Right, right.
They were channeling it. Huh. Is it easier to channel when you're working alongside your wife?
It depends. It depends on where we're starting out. You know, if she has a concept that she starts out first, it's more of a challenge because I want to make sure that I meet the expectations she had for the song.
Huh.
To where if we start something together, then we're both in there. It's a collaborative project. But if she starts it first and then brings it to me, it's more of a challenge because I'm careful about how I'm treading on the song.
And what about the other way around? What if you start it? How does it work?
And she'll tell you this because she's not here right now, but she'll tell you if I start a song and bring her into it, 9 times out of 10, those songs are some of the best ones that we've created.
Oh,
because
cool.
when I lay the foundation and then she gets the singing over it, or she gets to bring in her energy to it, it just brings magic that is a part of our chemistry and our synchronicity and our family. It represents us perfectly.
Did you have that from the beginning, Samir, or is that something that developed?
That's something that we've always had, yeah. And because in the beginning, in terms of forming a group and really moving the pieces and getting things started, I'm the one that moved a lot of that. And so when I would bring ideas and then she would bring in her input, that's the best way we work. So that's been how we worked from the beginning.
Huh. Well, you know, I know that musicians resist labels, and rightly so, you know, but, you know, audiences kind of need to know or want to know, well, what are they? What do they do? And so I would say my description of what I've seen, which I certainly haven't seen your whole oeuvre, but conscious hip hop is what I think of. Is that how you think of what you do?
Well, that's one thing that we used to call it that, and we used to be put in that label or that box. And the way we view it now is roots music. So it's just, you know, we bring in all of our roots. You know, I was born in Belgium, I was raised in the Congo, and Asia was born in New York, and her father was in the military, so she moved around a lot. So we just really representing all of our roots into the music. So that's what we label our music as, roots music.
I see. That's interesting. You're based in Colorado Springs. In Colorado Springs, I'm not familiar with the music scene there at all. But if it produces you guys, then there's something going on there. Maybe you could tell me
a little
about what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, Asia and I moved here in 1998, summer 98. Her father got stationed here. My stepfather got stationed here. And we've been here since. And there's something magical about this place. We've thought about leaving a few times. We thought of moving. And just, you know, from touring, a lot of times when we tour, if we're in New York or L.A., if we're there for 2 weeks, there's so much that we can get done. A lot of times we say, well, if we lived here, imagine how much more successful we would be, or, you know, the access we would have to labels and magazines and so many things. But there's something special about coming back to Colorado Springs that, you know, I haven't felt anywhere else.
Was there a hip-hop scene when you moved there, or is that something that you sort of helped create?
Yeah, definitely helped create it. There's an artist named Black Pegasus who's still, you know, creating albums these days. He and I were in different groups at the time, and we used to go into little venues and coffee shops and bars and ask them if we could have a night, and they would give us, like, a Monday night, and we started having, you know, weekly hip-hop events. And slowly created the scene that way. This is, you know, early 2000s. And eventually, you know, it really grew and more groups started doing stuff. Now, there's so many artists nowadays because it's so easy to record from home. You know, I know a lot of high school students and college students who record from home. So you know, you could be an artist everywhere. So there are a lot of great artists in Colorado Springs. There are a lot of great blues musicians. There are great folk singers as well. So yeah, we're really proud to be part of this this musical city.
Well, from the outside looking in, Colorado Springs does not have the reputation of being a musical mecca, but to hear you right. talk, it sounds like it's happening.
And that's the thing is, you know, a lot of times it doesn't have, we don't have platforms and we don't have outlets here, but a lot of the artists from here do get a lot of great exposure. There's an artist named Zanti, for example. She just put out a record this week. And, you know, she got an interview in KEXP, and she got a review in American Songwriters magazine. So, you know, I think some people recognize the talent coming from here. It's not everybody. You know, you don't get to hear from it everywhere. You know, Asia and myself, we've been on Sirius XM in New York City and a lot. You know, and we tour internationally. So people are always surprised to see that we come from here. A lot of times, like, when people fly us out from DIA, they would say, oh, they remind us of Denver. I'm like, no, we're not from Denver. We're from Colorado Springs.
I love that. Well, surely, though, you're going up and performing in Denver fairly often. In fact, I think I read that you opened for somebody at Red Rocks.
Yes, we did. So we opened for a group called Black Star and for an artist named Nas. And, yeah, this was at Red Rocks a year and a half ago. And, you know, Red Rocks is one of those places, it's a bucket list, you know, where I know so many times we've spent time there just hiking, you know, and standing on the stage and picturing ourselves performing there. You know, a lot of our musician friends would play and we would be backstage just like, man, I can't wait till the time where it's us. And and we actually have a recap video from that performance on YouTube. And just being there, we brought our kids on the stage for the last song because it was a big accomplishment for us, you know.
Yes, it was. What was it like being on that stage performing in that amazing place?
Yeah, every moment. I mean, we cherish every minute we were on that stage. From the moment our DJ played the first song, you know, from the moment we walked on the stage to the moment we walked off. I could see every single person that I knew in the crowd. You know, that's how attentive and present I was. You know, I could recognize, you know, our fans that were wearing the shirts or, you know, our family members or some of our friends who traveled from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins, you know, all the way to make it to Red Rocks to see us, you know, and celebrate with us. And so, it was really, really a beautiful day, and we can't wait to do it again.
Well, you've opened for a lot of pretty important musicians in your genre. What have you taken from that experience in terms of the music business?
Yeah, so in terms of the music business, one of our favorite person that we've opened for is Lauryn Hill from the Fugees, and Lauryn Hill is iconic. You know, she's Grammy winner. She's done a lot of incredible things from movies to just producing, you know, wonderful albums that we came up listening to, you know, we got to telling her these stories. You know, one of Asia and I's first dates, we were watching, the Unplugged DVD from Lauryn Hill. And that's one of the connections that we had. And, you know, the fascinating part about Lauryn Hill is that she's one of those artists who was, you know, whenever you open for really big artists, you're not sure if you're going to get to meet them. You're not sure if they're going to be nice. And with her, we played a show in Boulder at the Boulder Theater. Then we opened for her at the Ogden in Denver. And right after we performed, she came and asked us if we were available to follow her on the tour for the Midwest run. And so that was really a blessing. And she told her manager, you know, make sure the Reminders got everything they need to be able to come on the road with us. If they wish to bring the kids, make sure the kids are taken care of. And so we just really learned that, you know, when you have that platform and you're able to help other people, just, you know, do it as much as you can, because that's what she did for us. And it changed our career.
Huh. That's impressive. Well, it sounds like it couldn't happen to better people, and I say that just on the strength of watching your videos. The one mm-hmm. video that was filmed, it looked like it was at a cigar factory in Nicaragua.
Oh yeah.
That's a cool video. You know, and you had a very hopeful song that video is.
Yeah. Well, so the story behind that song is a good friend of ours named Nicholas Melillo. He has his own cigar company called Foundation Cigars. And we watched him go from working for a big company to starting his own cigar company, and just how successful he got in a very short time. You know, it took a lot of hard work. And, you know, he always supported us. We always supported him. And he used to say, hey, I would love to really put these two things together, you know, the cigar world and the music world, if you guys could create a song. And so, you know, we sat in the basement and produced. That's one of the first songs we produced ourselves. And We produced the song. We recorded it. As soon as he heard it, he said, we have to fly to Nicaragua to go film it. I said, are you serious? And within a week, we were on the flight, you know, on a flight from Miami to Nicaragua. And we spent 3-4 days there. Shot the video and just met the people, you know, heard the people's stories, and just a beautiful place.
You know, there were several lines in that Foundation song that really jumped out at me. Build a kingdom for mm-hmm. our people with a purpose and a plan.
That's right.
Another thing, at another point, you talk about the presence of Holy Spirits on sacred ground.
That's right.
And, you know, that's a beautiful thing. That is such a beautiful thing that you're doing there. And, you know, it's obvious to me that because you're in that vein, it's sort of self-supporting. It's sort of like the universe heaping affirmations on top of you. Is that your experience of it?
100%. And you know, it's about surrounding yourself with good people. You know what I mean? You could be a good person, but you got to make sure you watch the people who are around you if they're uplifting, if they're on the same mission as you are. And this the Foundation song was a perfect example of that, is we collaborated with somebody who we see eye to eye with. Even though we're in different industries and in different worlds, it's still the same. You know, we have reasoning sessions, as we call them, where we just sit around and we talk about these different things. We talk about the different books that we've read and how we view life, what our plans are, you know, what our 5-year plans are. And that's, you know, we just basically turned one of those conversations into a song.
Huh. And that was several years ago, right?
That was last year.
Oh, that was just last year. Oh, how about that?
It was just last year. Yeah, it was August. No, it was July of last year, actually.
Well, you know, I after listening to that song, I found myself wondering what your take on what's going on right now with Black Lives Matter and all the protests. How does that feel to you?
Man, you know, the interesting part about it is the timing of it, because, you know, I feel like because everybody's at home and on their devices, on the computer, they have no choice but to see it and experience it for what it is. My take on it is that it's not a new conversation. It's a conversation that we've had in our home for decades at this point. You know, it's a conversation we've had in our homes since the Black Panther Party movement, since Martin Luther King, since Malcolm X. It's a conversation, you know, police brutality is a thing that is real, that's been going on and just a lot of people just haven't paid attention to it. Mm. So now that everybody has no choice but to see it firsthand, you know, you have social media at your fingertips and people are sharing videos all day long. So, you know, now a lot of people are in shock about it. And that's why, you know, I've seen a lot of people protest who I never would have imagined they would have been out on the streets protesting before, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, our take on it is, you know, I'm glad that people finally realized what's going on. Even to tell you the truth, people were reaching out to us when that happened, like, hey, you should probably do a song, let's do this, let's do that. I said, you know what, if you really listen to the message in our music, we already talk about these concepts, we already talk about the message is already in there, and it's been in there for years now. So just because you're waking up to it don't mean that I need to rewrite, you know what I mean? I can share some songs from 5-10 years ago,
right?
So, you know, it's definitely, we're living in a special time.
Yeah, and does that give you a different kind of opportunity as an artist to do what you do?
It does. And living in Colorado as well, in Colorado Springs, we are one of the few socially aware, conscious artists, if you will. So we were, a lot of people were reaching out to us to do, you know, different podcasts, interviews, and appearances, and all of these different things. So we were really busy for a solid 2 weeks, to the point where it was overwhelming. And so we did it, you know, we played our position. We shared our voice and opinion. And after a while, we had to take a break from it. You know, it got to be too much. I had to tell people, like, you know what, I still need time for my family, because it weighs heavy on our children as well. You know, because our children are familiar with what's going on, and they just kept seeing it all the time. You know, it got to a point where we just had to turn all the devices off and just really take a break from it all.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Well, it strikes me that your songs put forward a message that is relevant for all people, because you're talking about heart things. You're talking about, you know, expressing and heart things and sacred land and all of those things that make for a real life on a real planet with real people.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that comes with raising children. You know, it's a reality. It's not just like I'm performing for, you know, a few fans who I'm not attached to. Like, to tell you the truth, 9 times out of 10, I'm very familiar with the people who come to our shows, whether it means they're engaging with us online or we've met before in a different setting. We remember these things because we're thankful for everyone. And so, you know, our position is we have a follow through. You know, we understand we have a responsibility, and having children gives you that. You know, you're raising your children. They're watching you. They're listening to you. You know, they're you know, our children have been a part of our musical career for as long as they've been here. They understand how, they understand the work that goes into it. Then they've seen what it's taken to create a song or to create an album, and then to see a poster on the wall or to see us on a news interview. You know, they get excited because they know how hard we work. Mm. You know, so just setting that example.